I'm sure people listening have heard this expression of culture fit, which might be one of my most hated phrases in all of business. Because what does fit even mean, first of all? And are you actually wanting a culture where everybody fits? Or are you wanting a culture where people add?
You're listening to The Stand-Up from Monday.com, where we talk to real leaders every episode to get their sharpest insights. Julianne, thank you so much for joining us today. Julianne is the founder and CEO of Collective Moxie, which is an organization dedicated to innovative and creative diversity, equity, and inclusion work. And she's worked with a variety of organizations from Google, Walt Disney Studios, NBC Universal, and I'm super pleased to have her here on the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Yael. It's such a pleasure to see you.
I'd love to hear a story from you of how you've seen DEI kind of either transform organizations, transform teams, transform a leader, something in your personal experience or something that you've worked with before. I'd love to hear a story about your work.
One of the anecdotes I can share is when I was at Disney and I was working with a wonderful guy named Steve Asbell, who's now head of 20th Century Studios. And I don't think he'll mind me sharing the story. He was at the time one of the senior leaders on the team. And we were in the middle of the pandemic trying to figure out how to produce content again. We started to do a lot of work on the development of different scripts in that time period because it's something we could focus on, right? It's something we could do remotely. And he called me one day out of the blue. I'm in my house, right? Like everybody else, I'm at home. And he says, I want to just say, I get it now. And I said, what do you mean I get it now? DEI. And he's talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And really what he's talking about is inclusive leadership. And he shared the story. So two of my team members, they were working with one of his team members on a script. It was for a thriller type movie. Wasn't really centered on any particular culture or identity, but was really kind of like a tech-based thriller. And they gave him and his team some notes. And a lot of the notes were actually more so questions. Questions around, hey, how have you thought about different maybe stereotypes or other things that might be functioning here? And they just asked some really profound, thought-provoking questions. Not saying you have to make the family from this background or that background, but it got the team thinking. And suddenly they went, wait a second, why haven't we thought about what this family looks like? And they started to unpack the story choices. And they actually started to make some different choices within the story based on those questions, based actually on the creative thought process. And then he called me and he said, I get it. Because what he started to realize was the value of diversity of thought within a process. And that for him was an unlocking moment. He had never actually thought about it. The diversity of voices at the table actually led to better questions, which led to a better, stronger creative outcome.
You know, you've worked in some pretty entrenched kind of industries where the maybe a little bit more old school, have their kind of ways of working. How do you as a leader then incorporate those kind of changes to those initial processes or changes to those foundations and encouraging people to ask questions or changing things around?
So Yael, it's a great question. You know, one of the things I always say is part of change making is that it really is a step-by-step kind of process. And so one of the first exercises is actually to map the process for whatever business output you're focused on at that point. So one of the things we'll do is we'll work with a team to say, hey, let's map your creative process end to end, out on paper. Like, let's just literally look at it, like objectively. What are each of the steps that it takes to go from an idea to a final project that's in the world? And then let's take a look at each of those steps, right? And start to ask some questions, thought-provoking questions. Usually, it starts with a question around why. Why do we make this decision around doing this particular step at this particular time? And what are maybe the assumptions we're making in that decision? And we start to essentially do a version of an audit, if you will, actually, right? But really just through questioning, not through assuming, not through like demanding that needs to be one way or the other, but simply starting to ask questions. And those conversations, looking at each step of the process, asking questions, usually starts to unlock conversation, usually comes more questions. And suddenly, a lot of things that were actually happening implicitly start to be made explicit. And so I'll give you an example. Criteria for hiring somebody for a job. I want you to think, Yael, about the last time you were hiring somebody, right? Or our listeners at home. Was there actually a discussion on how people were prioritizing internally the criteria for this role? Meaning, what was most important to you, Yael, the same as your colleague who was sitting next to you who was also interviewing this candidate, right? So were you prioritizing perhaps experience? Was the person next to you prioritizing maybe their creative output? And so making explicit these assumptions we're making around the hiring process, right, is super important. So do you want to agree as a team ahead of time? For example, maybe sit down, write the job description, and then ask the question, what is most important to us about the person we hire in this role? What is the number one thing we need on the team? What is the number one thing we're looking for? An exercise as simple as that can start to unlock bias that's happening even amongst the team. And then I always encourage people to ask the deeper question. Experience, for example. Experience is a tricky one because when we think about it, experience, what we're actually really looking for, usually, is competency, which is different than experience. Experience is not made equal. What access people had to opportunities very much determined by their own story, whatever their lived experience is. And so maybe the better thing to look at if you're talking about experience is what competencies you're looking for, because then that starts to open the aperture of, is it somebody who's done this job before? Or is it somebody that's bringing a skill set, a competency that we really need on the team? And these are the kinds of discussions when you think about the hiring process that can start to be really unlocking and actually get you to the better hire. Because instead of looking at the things that are maybe surface level, could be packed with bias in the case of you thinking about experience, you're actually drilling down on what you really need. And then you all are agreeing on that and then proceeding with the interview process. This is going to make it better not only for you all as the hiring team and the group making the decision, but it's going to be better for every candidate that interviews for the role because there's going to be clarity about what you're looking for.
The jobs that we're hiring for and every company culture is so radically different. So even if, let's say, you found somebody who did this exact job beforehand and you bring them into this company, they may fail for a multitude of reasons that have nothing to do with their experience.
Correct.
And by focusing on competence or competencies, you're kind of almost hiring a little bit for potential, but also hiring to make sure that you are going to hire somebody who will ultimately be successful in the role. I'm curious how that applies when you have talent already in the organization, considering internal mobility or thinking about who to promote or who to put in leadership positions. How do you make sure that you're also doing that? Is it a similar process? What's been your experience?
When we think about, you know, performance review and we're evaluating somebody for a promotion, and one of the things that social scientists have discovered about us as humans is that we like a little thing called recency bias. Recency bias means that we often remember the most recent piece of information about something and replace it for the whole data set. And this can happen all the time when you think about performance reviews. So you're looking at somebody's body of work. Usually it's like 2-3 years if you're looking at it from a promotion standpoint, right? We tend as humans to remember the most recent interactions we've had with that person and replace it for the whole data set. So for example, say they've really delivered or hit something recently out of the park. We look at that and often weigh that more than looking at the full body of work that we're actually evaluating for that promotion or that performance review. The same is true on the negative. If we've had a recent negative interaction, meaning maybe there was a mistake that happened, right? Something didn't go as smoothly, we often will unfairly judge that person in a negative light without looking at the full breadth and depth of what they've done. And so this goes back to that criteria question we were talking about, the hiring, which is before you go into a performance evaluation process, a couple of things that have been proven to work is to remind people right before you go into the performance review about their own biases, to actually remind people, hey, let's think about recency bias and let's hold each other accountable in the conversation if we start to feel that we're hearing language or we're hearing feelings that are leading us in that direction, first of all. Secondly, same as hiring, list out that criteria. What is it that you're actually wanting to focus on this performance review process? What is most important, second important, third? And then to also consider context, right, for people's experiences. And that's why 360s, you know, a lot of companies do 360-degree reviews where you get inputs from all different parts of somebody's day-to-day work can be really beneficial, because sometimes if you're only getting the perspective of the manager, right, you're not necessarily getting all the context around somebody's performance story over the last year. And I think that is also tremendously important. And so one of the things to ask is, like, what are we doing or not doing to enable the success of this person? That is also a really important question to ask, because oftentimes we will put the onus, right, on the employee entirely, as if the organizational culture, to your point, has nothing to do with whether or not somebody is succeeding or failing. And that's a really important conversation, because it starts to get at the heart of, we as a leadership team, where do we want our culture to evolve to, right? Because culture is not a static thing. What are we thinking about and what are we wanting to do in terms of our culture? And sometimes asking that question during the performance review process can actually start to eliminate to leaders that, hey, wait a second, there's a pattern, right? Like between a couple of employees, or, hey, like a few people that theoretically were being successful are not anymore. What's happened? And I think it can start to unpack, right, some of those questions we were talking about, and start to really do some self-reflection. Because I think part of the performance review process is not just evaluating the person that's in front of you. It's also evaluating the health of the organization and what you are and maybe not doing for the success of the employees. And so those are a couple of things I would highlight as we think about sort of that internal process.
A lot of times when we talk about DEI, employee culture, development, things like that, as an old boss of mine used to say, it's squishy, right? It feels very up in the clouds and maybe like, but what you're describing is something that's actually tied to like very real business impact. And a lot of times what we're doing is we're kind of accepting parts of our culture that maybe we don't like. And then we're not able to bring in people who are maybe a little bit different than us. And we think of it as almost like a bad thing. Oh, they're not in our culture. But maybe there are things in our culture that we don't like.
You and I both heard, and I'm sure people listening have heard this expression of culture fit, which might be one of my most hated phrases in all of business. Because what does fit even mean? And are you actually wanting a culture where everybody fits? Or are you wanting a culture where people add? It is actually unlocking, because it's getting at exactly what you're talking about, which is not only that cultures are evolving things, but that when you start to talk about cultural add, it starts to illuminate the gaps possibly in your culture. If we want the organization to feel different, we actually need to like intentionally go after difference then, which means that's cultural add. That's not cultural fit. As a leader, do you need to think about to ensure that that person is successful, knowing full well that they're bringing a different point of view into the organization? Because it shouldn't be on them alone to be like wading through the waters of the culture and looking around and going, ah, oh, shoot, wait a minute, like I'm the outlier. It needs to be that they feel that their manager is on that train with them and saying very intentionally, I know that you are a disruptive force. It's actually the reason I hired you. And I want to make sure that you're set up for success. What can we do together to ensure that? And we can create that cultural shift together. And I cannot say enough how important that is as well.
What strategies have you seen succeed in those cases? Is it back to that kind of process and questioning? Are there other things that you've seen in other organizations that have been effective? when you're hiring those kind of senior level managers that need to make pretty big changes or filling in that, I love this term, I'm going to use it all the time now, cultural add into the organization?
To be a successful leader, you need to be an inclusive leader. You need to be thinking both with your heart and your head at the same time. I have been able to make the most impact the fastest when there is process to the onboarding of me into an organization. This is really important. I know for a fact I'm coming in, I'm bringing a different perspective. And then from there, you can start to make a plan together, right, about what that cultural add, right, or that disruptor kind of role can be. Creating those relationships as somebody who was an outsider and somebody who was coming to shake things up in those first 90 days was everything to my success later on, because without those first foundations, you can't possibly grow from there.
We'd love to ask you what's some kind of media that you can't live without right now.
If you are really curious about how to be a more inclusive leader, there is a ton of great literature out there. One of my favorite podcast guests and good friends, Daisy Ogier-Dominguez, has a great book that she just came out with called From Burnt Out to Lit Up, How to Lead Through Tough Times and Essentially Re-Energize Yourself and Your Team. I cannot think of a book that is more appropriate for the moment of in time that we're in with so much change in the world and our society. So From Burnt Out to Lit Up, check it out from Daisy Ogier-Dominguez.
Julianne, thank you so much for joining. This has been amazing to catch up and also some actionable tips how leaders can really improve their approach to diversity and equity. Thank you so much for joining.
Oh my gosh, it was an absolute pleasure, Yael.
I had a blast sitting down with Julianne today talking about how to better incorporate diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in every team and in every organization. Here are three things that I learned. First, that when we think about DEI, we should stop thinking about it as kind of a squishy, standalone program and instead think about how do we incorporate good business practice into every aspect of our organization. So that means hiring, onboarding, how do we achieve business impact? All of that touches DEI. Two, think about talent as adding something. Look for gaps in your teams. Look for gaps in your managers. And think about, how do I bring in a diverse voice to add something? Rather than thinking about cultural fit, think about cultural add. And the third thing is to always think about how can you be a better sponsor for other talent in your organization and not always look for the person who's most like you, whether that's through the experience that they have or through the work that they're doing. A lot of times sponsorship can come from lots of different places, but having somebody's back at every stage of their career is a great way to pay it forward. Those are my three takeaways. Love talking to Julianne today.
Our next stand-up is in 2 weeks. Before you go, if you found this episode thought-provoking, consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about our conversation or more takeaways to help with all the leadership roles you play, visit monday.com or sign up for our newsletter. Links are in the show notes. We'll see you at our next stand-up.